want to do a little poll here. How many of us have read a self-help book? How many have taken a yoga class or tried meditation? How many have adopted a new diet in hope of better health? How many of us have wondered what our true calling at work should be, what job we could have to be more, fulfilled? Or where would we would live if we didn't have family to care for and a career to manage? How many of us? Am I alone? I'm not alone. Here's another one. Who's ever had a moment, or maybe lots of moments, when they felt like the King Solomon in the verse that Kate read this morning from Ecclesiastes? You know, this isn't like the Peter, Paul, and Mary part of Ecclesiastes. To everything, there's a season, turn. This is the Peggy Lee part of Ecclesiastes, right? Is that all there is? Is this all there is? Meaningless is one translation, meaningless. Our work and effort is meaningless. No one will remember it. Our children won't remember it. Generations won't remember it. The earth comes and goes. We're forgotten. This is a pretty bleak view. Where is the happiness? Where is the joy? Who among us hasn't had these thoughts? I mean, if you live on the same earth that I do, you've thought this. Like little kids, they don't seem to worry, but you don't get much through adolescence without wondering, what is fulfillment? What is happiness? So many of our human endeavors, so much of what we spend our time and effort on is really about the search for flourishing. Engineering, science, medicine, at its core, that's what it's about. Politics. You know, every couple of years they come out with this happiness index. You read the happiness index, and it's always the Nordic countries that are happier. And what do we say? If we could just get our policy right, if we just could just get our politics right, then we'd be happy, right? We spend a lot of time thinking about how do we get happy. And yet there's no question that we are healthier, more comfortable, safer, and more free as humans than we have ever been. These things are pretty big, right? I mean, this is a great epic to live in. And yet, is there any evidence that we're happier? The longing for happiness, for joy, for fulfillment, it's one of the reasons that people seek. It's one of the core reasons for religion. It's an old quest and an ongoing one. A professor of religion, Jonathan Pennington, puts it this way. He says, there is one meta-theme or meta-concept that appears with remarkable tenacity and consistency across times and worldviews. This concept has staying power, a universal voice, because it addresses what is most basic and innate to all humanity, despite the diversity of race, culture, and values. It is a concept that proves to be the motivating force and the end goal of all that humans do and think. This idea or theme can be identified as human flourishing. Human flourishing alone, he goes on, is the idea that encompasses all human activity and goals, because there is nothing so natural and inescapable as the desire to live, and to live in peace, security, love, health, and happiness. These are not merely cultural values or the desire of a certain people in a certain time. The desire for human flourishing motivates everything that humans do, both belief in religion and disbelief, rejection of it, monogamous marriage and a promiscuous lifestyle, waging war and making peace, studying history and creating art, planting fields and building skyscrapers. All human behavior, he says, when analyzed deeply enough, will be found to be motivated by the desire for life and flourishing, individually and corporately. And If there's something so central to the human condition, you can bet that the Bible has something to say about it. The idea of happiness, joy, and peace, fulfillment, this is a concern of faith. Now, when Randy first asked us earlier in the spring to read through the Sermon on the Mount several times, I'll admit that it had been a little while since I had read it, sort of goalpost to goalpost. And I happened to have spent a fair bit of time trying to get happy this spring, and I was reading a lot of self-help books. And one of my favorite authors of self-help books is this guy named Henry Oliver, and he's sort of a Christian-based guy, and he does a lot in wisdom literature. So when I reread the Sermon on the Mount, I thought, wait a second, this is wisdom literature. Sermon on the Mount is not only about eschatology. It's not just an articulation of the dispensation of grace. It is those things, but it's also about how the wise orient their lives in order to flourish. At the beginning of his ministry, Jesus is painting a picture of what true God-centered human flourishing looks like. It's not just an upping of the ante from Hebraic law. It's not a tit for tat. It's also not about altruism, selfless concern about others. The Sermon on the Mount is sort of this self-help book within the New Testament that addresses the question, how do I flourish in the world? It's not a legalistic formula to appease God, but rather an appeal to our own self-interest to pursue happiness or flourishing through correct relationship with God. This theme explains the very nature and goal of God's redemption for us in Christ. And I have to say, when I started to think of it in this way, I really love this idea. You know, I think many of us as Christians, at some point when we're doing Bible study or trying to describe Christianity to people, you get this feeling like, wait a second, am I here for God's entertainment? Am I a pawn in a play? What is this all about, right? But I think if we start to think about the Sermon on the Mount as God's desire for us to flourish, I start to get into a relationship with God that looks more like what a parent wants for his child, what a creator wants for his creation, how the Redeemer wants us to be redeemed. It all starts to fit. Pennington spends time talking about the translation of the word ashrei. And Vern, I was kind of hoping you wouldn't be here because you're probably going to come to me after this and say, not quite right. It's not quite the right translation, but go with me here. So Pennington spends some time talking about the translation from Hebrew to Greek of the word ashrei. And the translation from Hebrew ashrei into the Greek makairos is often translated into blessed in English. And he argues that while ashrei and makairos are good translations, one for the other, blessed a little bit misses the mark. The makairos, or ashrei, is well-being. It's the well-being of someone who lives life wisely. It's happiness. When we read the word blessed in wisdom literature, it usually means this kind of makairos, fullness, wholeness, joy. This word can be compared to the word barak. And the word barak is also blessed, but it doesn't mean the exact same thing. Blessed is like what Debbie was saying. We're blessed because we're having a couple more kids come in. We're blessed to be able to do Opal. We're blessed with good health, right? So blessing describes a relationship between a person and the divine in which the divine has favor. Ashrei or makanos is about the state of being. of those who have been found favor, right? So it's a state of being, and it's often something that someone observes. That person is blessed. That person is happy. So there's a slight, there's a subtle difference, but it's not about, it's about the relationship with God and a state of being around it. And if you think about it, the wisdom literature where we see so much of this, Makarios, isn't about the heroes of faith or sort of the arc of redemption, right? It's really about the state of being of people. Let's look at the first psalm that Kate read. It's a great example of this. Blessed or happy. Let's use the word flourishing. It says flourishing are the ones who don't walk in step of who don't walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way of the sinners, or sit in the company of mockers. Flourishing are the people who stand with God, who obey God's word, who align with God, who sit, who put their full weight with the people of God. That's who flourishes. And what does flourishing look like? I love this image. What does flourishing look like? It looks like a tree next to a stream. Right? I mean, this tree is not dependent on the rain, on the vicissitudes of happenstance. This tree has a source of nourishment that's deep, that's maybe even hidden. It doesn't wither. And yet it doesn't bear fruit all the time. There are periods of sadness. There are periods of sadness, but the flourishing and the people who are flourishing experience them as well. This is a vision of flourishing. So with this vision of flourishing in mind, what happens to our Beatitudes that we see in the Sermon on the Mount? And by the way, so if it's Ashrei in Hebrew, Makarios in Greek, it's Beatitudes in Latin. That's where we get the word Beatitudes. So what happens to our Beatitudes? Let's call them our flourishings in the Sermon on the Mount. How should we read them? Are they blessings offered to those who display these virtues? Are they signs of salvation? Are they the actions that bring reward? Or are they more than that? Flourishing are the poor in spirit, because the kingdom of heaven is theirs. Flourishing are the mourners, because they will be comforted. Flourishing are the humble, because they will inherit the world. Flourishing are the peacemakers. Flourishing are the peacemakers, because they will be called the children of God. Flourishing are the ones who are hungering and thirsting for righteousness, because they will be satisfied. Flourishing are you when ever people revile and slander and speak all kinds of evil things against you on account of me. Read in this way, Beatitudes cast a vision for life. It's an invitation. As a prophet and as a teacher, Jesus is offering and inviting his hearers into a way of being in the world that will result in their true and full flourishing now and in the age to come. Jesus isn't providing a list of moral behaviors that describe the truly pious, but rather a redefinition of who the people of God are. They are the ones whose lives look like this Makarios way of being. When you can weep, when you can identify with the little ones, when you can make peace, when you can be persecuted and still be joyful, then you are doing it right. The gospel of Jesus, the good news of Jesus' own message, is that there is a way of being that moves beyond both secular and religious conventional wisdom. The path of transformation of which Jesus spoke leads from a life of requirements and measuring up, whether to culture or to God, to a life of relationship with God. It leads from a life of anxiety to a life of peace and trust. It leads from the bondage of self-preoccupation to the freedom of self-forgetfulness. It leads from a life centered in culture to a life centered in God. Blessed be.